I think for young people in particular, it is really advisable that when they're still of working age, they put a lot of their earnings either into a pension fund or into property.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Unpack podcast, where we chat about all things property and finance related. Today we have another very, very special guest. He was the first Black governor of the South African Reserve Bank, and he's currently serving as the South African Minister of Finance. Most people know him for his budget speeches, and some might even remember seeing his signature on the banknotes. Minister Tito Mboweni, welcome to the Unpack podcast. Can you tell us more about what it's like in the day-to-day life of a finance minister?
Well, thank you very much for having me on your podcast. Much appreciated. My job is fairly boring, actually. So on Mondays, I attend to political work for the ANC. In fact, almost all ANC leaders on Mondays are expected to attend to political work. Like later today, I'll be attending a meeting of the National Disciplinary Committee, where we're dealing with a disciplinary matter that will take quite a while and so on. That would have been a Monday, but that has been shifted to Thursday. Normally, it should have been done on a Monday. Then on Tuesdays, it's usually either the National Coronavirus Command Council or cabinet subcommittees, which take the whole day, basically. On Wednesdays, it's cabinet meetings, which cabinet then receives a whole lot of recommendations from the cabinet subcommittees. Thursdays, like today, is ANC caucus at 10 o'clock. And then that goes on from 10 to 12, and then 1400 hours until late, normally parliament and things like that. Fridays is normally freer. That's when I'm able to attend to what I call administrative matters from the different entities that I work with. But usually, because the days of the week are all already clocked up, I use the evenings and nights to do my administration work and my thinking and my strategic thinking and so on. So that's why I sleep about 2 o'clock in the morning usually, because I have to catch up because the day is clocked up. So that's what happens in the life and times of a Minister of Finance. And in between, obviously, you have to fit in all sorts of other meetings, whether it's with the banks, the ratings agencies, or it is with private companies, or it's with staff members and officials and so on. So it tends to be very cluttered, but one needs a kind of an organized system. But that's what happens. And then there's G20 meetings, there's IMF, World Bank meetings, all of which have to be fitted together. African Union finance ministers, the Southern African Customs Union ministers, the Southern African Development Community ministers of finance, and so on. So we have to try and fit everything in a week.
I follow you on Twitter, and you always talk about Magoba's Kloof. Can you tell me more about this part of the country? What's so special about it, and why did you choose to live here?
Well, Magoba's Kloof is very special for a number of reasons. One is it's a very strange place as well, I must say. It is the northernmost point of the Drakensberg mountain range. So in fact, I'm on top of the Drakensberg mountain range, but on the northern part of it. Here, you find a number of the big rivers that flow eastwards, start from here. They emerge from the mountain here, from the ground. So there's waterfalls and all kinds of beautiful scenic water features. It's green and beautiful mountain hiking trails. As I said, lots of water, very misty, drizzles and rains most of the time. And it's very cool and cold, which is what I like. So the general atmosphere is one which I like. It's not hot, unlike what people might think of Limpopo, that everything is hot here. It's not true. Almost every night here, whether it's summer or winter, I have to make fire. I have to light the fireplace. And It is a tourist hotspot. It has hotels, bed and breakfast places, number of restaurants here, very good food, walking trails, as I said, nature reserves. And for me, it was the ideal place. But the thing that attracted me to this particular property was because you drive from the Great Gate straight up, and then there's a roundabout. So it reminded me of the old English movies where, you know, there'll be a roundabout and then you get off just next to the door. So it attracted me to this place. So, and I had an opportunity to do some mini farming activities, grow some lambs and sheep and also some chickens. We're able to grow some chilies here, tomato and other vegetables. So, but in on a small scale. So it's wonderful. It's got activities. And if the internet works very well, I can also work very well from here.
So for somebody who's thinking about investing in their first home, do you recommend buying a property in the urban or the countryside of South Africa?
I think people can buy property anywhere in the countryside and also in the city. I have property in Johannesburg too. So part of my life is also in Johannesburg. It is just that I don't like the crowded nature of the cities. I need a bit of space, fresh air, and walk. But I do have property in Johannesburg. So when I'm in Johannesburg, I don't have to go and stay at a hotel. I stay at my own place. The value of the property increases over the years. I bought this particular property in Johannesburg in 1994. And I've seen it grow in value and so on. And it's helpful. The advantage about the countryside is that you know, of having property in the city and in the countryside, is that you can then shop your living. You can decide to, on certain days of the month, that you might live in the city and then on other days, go to the countryside. And most of my friends that I know in England, for example, they'll have an apartment in London, which they use during the week when they were working. And on Fridays, they'll go to the countryside and return on Monday. So that's not unusual to have that kind of mix. And I think for young people in particular, it is really advisable that when they're still of working age, they put a lot of their earnings either into a pension fund or into property. There's nothing as terrible as when people have to retire one day and they have nothing, no property, nothing. A property is an asset. Unlike going to buy an expensive car, which you might crash one day, property is very useful unless if there's an earthquake or anything like that. But it's advisable.
Yeah, I totally agree. So tell me more about Limpopo. So if I was thinking about buying a property in Limpopo, which areas would you recommend?
Well, to start off with, Magaliesberg, highly recommended. But also the Waterberg part of the country is also absolutely beautiful and wonderful. Properties around Bilabila in the countryside, for example, where there's also game farming, is highly recommended. Depending on how you feel, if you are not afraid of the heat, you know, the areas around Hoedspruit are also very good property areas, and you're not far from the Kruger National Park. You can always go and enjoy it there. I think for me, those are the areas which I would, you know, really recommend.
So speaking about Limpopo and how amazing the province is, do you have any suggestions to kickstart the tourism economy post-COVID?
No, the tourism economy here in Magaliesberg, for example, is happening. We have a number of good properties where people stay. Like our biggest center is the Magaliesberg Hotel. And last night I went there for dinner, and you know, a reasonable number of people there. The car park had a number of cars parked there from Johannesburg or GP. Then we have a number of smaller bed and breakfast places like the Bramasol and so on. And then we have a number of very good hiking spots where people hike I know this weekend, for example, a number of people have told me that they're coming through to visit our area. They are attracted by the Dibengeni waterfalls, for example. You must Google it, Dibengeni waterfalls. It excites people. One of the largest waterfalls in South Africa is here, and people come through to see that. Then we have the Mahoboslof canopy ride, where you can be suspended in the air and underneath is water for 2 hours, which people like very much. Then you've got some well-known restaurants here, like the Iron Crown restaurants, the Mountain Cafe, and so on. So people come down here to see that. And then you can also drive through to Agatha, the Agatha area, and there you'll find the Coach House Hotel, which is a well-known hotel, and King's Walden, which is an amazing place, and so on. So we already have tourism taking place. Like if I was to go to Iron Crown for lunch today, you'll find that it has a requisite number of people who are allowed in terms of the regulations. So things that are happening, people come from as far as Polokwane for lunch here, or they come from Johannesburg and Pretoria, stay over at the hotels and the bed and breakfast places. So, but yes, the COVID situation did affect the area, and restaurants were struggling quite a lot, but now things are picking up in our area. Yeah.
Can you please share some money-saving tips for young people?
The concept of saving is very complicated for people because, you know, I have a monthly salary. What does saving mean? It's very abstract. I must pay my bond, I must buy food, must pay for my car. So what is this saving thing? What does it mean? It gets very complicated. Until people understand that by buying your own house, your own apartment, rather than buying an expensive car, you're better off buying an apartment. And get a simple little car. Today you can go by Uber anyway. You can Uber anyway. You don't need your own expensive car. But put your earnings into some tangible assets that will help you into the future, or buy some, invest in the stock market, portion of your earnings and so on. But I think it's a difficult thing. And for young, impressionable people today, the first thing they want to do is to buy an expensive car, which is a useless thing to do. Then you crash it the following day. So I think, you know, what you're doing is very important to try and encourage young people to go into savings. Yeah.
So speaking about savings and having different income streams, can you tell us more about farming and how you got into farming?
I didn't know anything about saving when I was young. All I thought was you buy a head of cattle. Well, it was recreational, really. I thought I have a piece of land here. Let me try and use it. So I subdivided the property. And got some sheep. The initial attempt, obviously, was a disaster because the sheep I bought was a Karoo, and Karoo sheep don't survive in a wet area. This is a very wet area, so they died. But over time, we learned what we need to do and got the correct type of a sheep to live here. And the chickens as well, it was recreational. But it ended up becoming a little bit of a business activity for my nephew who lives with me. So he grows them and he sells them and he makes a bit of money out of it and things like that.
Wow, that's really nice. That's amazing. Young South Africans face many challenges, from political to environmental and even social issues. Do you have any recommendations to get more young people involved, considering the barriers to entry from capital to markets?
Now, the issue about barriers to entry, I can hear that. By the end of the day, it takes effort and determination. Effort, focus, determination. Don't accept failure and keep at it. Just keep at it. Nothing comes on a silver platter unless it's born into a rich family. all of us have had to struggle. But it must be focused and determined. And there's no shortcut. Whether you're young or old, there's no shortcut. I mean, if you want to, I mean, I see a number of young people who have very little technical education, starting businesses. I went to purchase some cement to do some work here at home, but I was driving a wrong car, so the cement wouldn't fit into my car. And then a young man approached me and said, sorry, sir, can I help you? So I said, yes. He says, I have a baki. I can load your cement for you and drop it at your home. So I said, but I don't know you. So he introduced himself and showed me his ID, gave me his phone number, and he said, I can deliver this for you, sir. I asked some other guys who were around whether they know this fellow, and they confirmed that they know him. He's a reliable fellow. And then I let him load my cement packs, and he came to deliver them, yeah. And then I paid him about $500 for that job. You know, that young man, it turns out every morning he wakes up, he goes to the fresh produce market, he buys lots of fresh produce, he goes to sell them to the people that the informal traders on the street. So he almost does the wholesale part of it. And then he sells them to these people, informal traders, and for the day he's got part of it, his income. Then he goes to park at this cement shop where I was, waits for people to buy things. He loads them for them and he delivers them. You know, and he's just an unbelievable entrepreneur. And so over the years, I got to know him. And then he needed to learn more about plumbing and being an electrician. And I supported him to do that. Now he's qualified as a plumber, as an electrician. And every time I have problems here at home, I call him to come and fix them for me. And so he didn't need the government to do anything for him. But as an entrepreneur, now he has been able to build a large house for himself and his family. They live fairly comfortably, but he still has to wake up in the morning to go to the fresh produce market. You know? And I suspect that in a day, he goes home with not less than 2,000 rand and then business. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really inspiring. Wow. Okay. I hear you. So a bonus question. I was going to ask you what's your favorite African country, but then I think it's probably you'll probably say South Africa or Rwanda, because you always talk about these two countries. So speaking about Rwanda, I read that it's home to one of the cleanest African cities, or the cleanest cities in the world. And that's really amazing. But what about like South Africa? If we want to enforce or like change rules, how do you go about that as a normal citizen? Like, do I write a letter to the president? Will he even reply? How do we go about asking or like enforcing new rules, basically? Because it would be nice for South Africa to be known for something like being the cleanest city in the world, or something positive for once.
Well, you have to start at school teaching the kids how to be what is the benefit of a clean environment, and then within the community, community leadership has to preach the culture of cleanliness all the time, whether it's at the street level, whatever it is. You can't rely on force. You have to rely on consciousness. So in the church, they must preach about cleanliness. At school, they must teach cleanliness. All of us must be in the mentality. Of course, in Rwanda, they had to impose strict rules at the beginning. But over time, it became the culture of the people to be in that clean environment. And it's amazing. I mean, one Sunday every month, there are no motor vehicles in Kigali. It's motor-free Sunday. People walk and exercise. You walk to your appointments, you know, and, you know, it's amazing. So you like it there. But you must carry your walking shoes with you.
Wow, that's so amazing. I would love to go to Rwanda one day, so I'll add that to my bucket list. Thank you so much again, for taking the time to speak to me. I personally learned a lot, and I hope other people find this insightful.
Thank you very much. Well, I have got questions in Parliament to answer. Yes.
Love this episode? Make sure to visit our website www.unpack.co.za to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. If you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply told a friend about us, that would be helpful too. Thank you for listening.